I think what's happening is the Fed will be cutting rate, the Fed needs to cut rates, but we're at the near the end game of Fed cutting rates and boosting risk assets, because this really got started on the stock market crash of 87. Chairman Greenspan cut rates that day. And then every single time since then, we know, everybody knows, oh, I can buy every dip because the Fed's there to save me. But then you get to a certain level, well, it's just too expensive. So we're at 2x GDP. Market cap. We're the most expensive versus the rest of the world. Yeah, we were 25-year high versus commodities, 20-year high versus gold, highest versus sales. You know, there's so many extreme levels of how high the stock market is historically. I like to use the annual basis, and you just go back 100 years. You got to go back to 1929.
Mike McGlone, Senior Commodity Strategist at Bloomberg Intelligence. Good afternoon to you. How are you?
Thanks for having me on.
Let's get right to it here. We had a hot inflation number come out today, Thursday, August 14th. Does that affect the Fed's direction, you think, in September here? And talk to me about that, as well as the tension between the Trump administration and the Fed. There's a lot of tension there right now.
We're about 93% based on the latest WIRP function, the Bloomberg, that they're going to cut 25 basis points at that September 17th meeting. Still plenty of data. We're still a month away. So it'll be kind of a shocker, I think, if they don't cut now. And so we'll have to have inflation coming in hotter, unemployment coming in hotter, and the stock market, obviously, to keep going up. But to me, this is part of how the world has changed this year. Maybe we live in interesting times, and it's so interesting. The key thing I could start out with Federal Reserve and Trump and the Trump administration is gold just absolutely loves this president, partly because, number one, he's pushing back on the independence of the Federal Reserve, which is part of the reason that the U.S. stock market has gained the status of the most expensive in the world versus the rest of the world. We've had such an exorbitant premium built in because the Fed's part of it. And also the tariffs. The tariffs are a shocker for earnings. At some point, that's going to hammer earnings. And then the bottom line is firing the Bureau of Labor Statistics leader on August 1st when he didn't like the data. I mean, that set a tone that is like silly, that, you know, every time we have data that comes out that Trump administration doesn't like, you got to really respect it because the person who put it out is risk getting fired. And anytime we have data that is, you know, coincident with what the Trump administration likes, okay, well, it's somewhat dicey because it's just that simple lesson that you learn being in the business a long time. It's human nature. If you have a risk at getting fired and you have four dependents, you have a job, you kind of need it, why mess with the status quo? So be careful with this. So the day the music died for the trust in U.S. data started on August 1st. So that's a bit of a thing that just gold loves. But in the meantime, I think what's happening is the Fed will be cutting rates. The Fed needs to cut rates, but we're at the near the end game of Fed cutting rates and boosting risk assets, because this really got started on the stock market crash of 87. Chairman Greenspan cut rates that day. And then every single time since then, we know, everybody knows, oh, I can buy every dip because the Fed's there to save me. But then you get to a certain level, well, it's just too expensive. So we're at 2x GDP. Market cap. We're the most expensive versus the rest of the world. Yeah, we were 25-year high versus commodities, 20-year high versus gold, highest versus sales. You know, there's so many extreme levels of how high the stock market is historically. I like to use the annual basis, and you just go back 100 years. You got to go back to 1929, the last time we were this elevated. And to me, that's what gold's figuring out. But now we're at that stage where I think the problem with this Trump administration 2.0 is they might have the unfortunate timing as Herbert Hoover, because when he came in, everything was fine, didn't really shake things up. Trump is. But that's the last time we had a new president come in and we were this expensive in the stock market. But, you know, there's many different measures. Either way, the point is it's got to keep going up or else we're going to have normal deflation. So let's point out what's happening. PPI is a little hot. Well, the number one factor that kept PPI this hot this time was the factor that is related to the stock market. It's the investment factor. Like, okay, I'm glad they include that because, you know, when you have this much wealth being created, it's definitely boosting inflation. But it's about going forward. So here we are in with this. It's August 14th for taping. Yesterday, the VIX dropped to 14.5. That was a low for the new low for the year. And the summer doldrums are ending soon. We all know that the free trade is volatile. It almost always goes up this time of year. How easy is it going to be? Will we end this year with just another risk asset up year, Bitcoin leading the way, cryptos leading the way, and the Fed eventually easing, or will we end it with stock market ticking down and potentially akin to what happened in 1999 and 2007? And to me, that's what gold is telling me by outperforming almost all assets, that by the time we get to the end of the year, just a little backup in stocks, a little uptick in volatility, and we already have the workings of these pillars kicking in by gold basically beating most risk assets.
Well, okay, great. I want to work that out a little bit more here with you. If and specifically with crypto and the stock market here, does one follow the other? And how are they interrelated, if you would? And I say all that previewing, I read a blog post and I would give credit if I remembered the name of the blog post. It was on Substack. But they were quoting you about how basically the soul, specifically to crypto and Bitcoin specifically, how it's all interrelated in the sense it's all based on that. Everybody's buying that, whether it's a huge fund or a country or whatever. And if that goes, it could get really scary. And it seems to me, as you've also said, the stock market goes up. So yeah, work that relationship out with me. And do they both need to go up? And what's the pain if it doesn't?
Yeah, so I like to point out that Bitcoin has now become the systematic risk of this asset is the highest ever seen. So just picture, first of all, let's point out the facts of Bitcoin. It's basically a proxy of leveraged beta, leveraged stock market. Good examples this year. The low for the year was in April 8th, when VIX peaked at 55, Bitcoin bottomed around 77. That was like the 4 p.m. mark. People say it didn't close anymore. Well, it does now because ETFs close. And the high for the year came April 13th, which was yesterday, at 123 on a close. That's when the VIX reached its low. So, okay, well, there's what matters. It's almost the highest correlation ever to the stock market in history. Okay, well, it makes sense because now it's in the mainstream. ETFs are there. It's being completely endorsed by the Trump administration. The technology is awesome. Tokenization, we can get to that later. But let's point out what it is. If the stock market goes up, Bitcoin should outperform. Now it's doing that this year. Beta, the stock market's up about 10%. Bitcoin was up about 30%. As we speak, it's closer to 25%. Okay, it's doing that. The Bloomberg Galaxy Crypto Index is up about the same. Okay, it should be because stocks are up. But that's the key thing is let's not underestimate what this space is. When you get an environment where the stock market is this high versus GDP, basically the highest in our lifetimes, it can support what is right now 19 million crypto assets. Most of them are just bogus. For instance, Dogecoin's worth $33 billion and attracts nothing. So that's supportable in a very highly speculative bubble situation, which we are in, guaranteed. It's just a question of how far it goes and when it pops. And that's why I've been starting to begin this year. My outlook was to be overweight. Well, not I can't put investment advice, but to think gold was going to be best performing assets along with treasuries. And so far, so good. A 50% portfolio that tracks gold is up 15%, and the rest treasuries add another two, maybe 17 to 20%. Yet it has half the volatility, almost all risk assets. That's not good in an environment that risk assets are on a tear. So my point is by the end of the year, it might make more sense if the stock market drops a little. But we're at that stage now is it's complete expectation. The lessons of Edward Chancellor, the former UK Prime Minister, what we anticipate seldom occurs. It's complete anticipated the stock market is going to go up, Federal Reserve is going to ease, and the Trump administration will make this better and greater. But the problem is it's already that expensive. So my thought is there's no optionality there. There's no trade. The trade, the big potential trade is if we just get a little back and fill. So there's only been two down years on a total return basis in the S&P 500 since 2008, and that's 2018. And 2022, both times Bitcoin and most other assets dropped a lot. So far it's complete dependency, most in our lifetimes, that stock market has to go up. The wealth effect's the greatest ever. And then I look at for other indications. So let's look at the rest of the world. Facing tariffs from the US, start with China. Their 10-year note yields 1.74 at the moment versus the US at 4.3 or so. Latest PPI out of year-over-year PPI to China is minus 3.6%. In the U.S., it's plus 3.7%. So sure, the rest of the world's facing severe deflationary forces, starting with China, trickling down. The key thing to remember is China is also running about debt to GDP around 300%. In this country, around 1.3 times, 130%. And their money supply is basically double what we're in this country. In this country, we're running $20 trillion. There, it's $45 trillion money supply just blasting off. They have to. It's basically doing what Japan did, which I remember well, having traded Japanese and JGBs. So the question is, what stops it? Where does it go next? And that's why I think the end of this year is going to be a key indicator. I'm sticking with gold. And I'll end with what I see what's happening with the pattern in gold. It's basically unchanged since April. It's a bull flag pattern on a five-month basis, and it's putting a foundation around 3,300. So you kind of want gold to go down if you want other risk assets to go up. And I'm afraid it's just waiting for risk assets to go down to take the next leg higher.
Right. So that really gets to my other question, and it's more of a statement, is you fully expect gold then, and I do as well, even if the stock market, let's say, even it goes down precipitously, it could be precipitously, or it can be just a normal 5 to 10% correction, you would expect gold to maintain its current, around these current price thresholds, correct?
I see gold right now, it's just anticipating, it's a tinderbox awaiting the spark to break out above 3,500, the high for the year, and just go to the next round number resistance around 4,000. Then the top tinderbox would be, if we just say start get a little moderation in the stock market come the end of the year, so it's up 10%. We'll say we're up only up 5%. See, that tilt would be lower towards the end of the year. To me, that's all gold wants, because it's the last vestige of inflation, the most significant last vestige of inflation on a global basis. You look at housing in the U.S., it's already starting turning. You look at China, it's really started to turn. Almost all the banks, most central banks in Europe are cutting. Why? Because they're getting hammered and they're facing unprecedented tariffs from the largest, world's largest significant demand pull importer of goods. And they've been exploiting the system for decades. Now they're getting hammered. And it's just a key thing to remember, complete remember, Andy, and it's a normal cycle. The book The Price of Time by Edward Chancellor just pointed out these cycles always happen. Grant Williams just had a podcast with him. And it's when you get massive pumps in liquidity and asset prices, they always revert. It's a question of time. So here's what I see in commodities. Clearly been the case in commodities. Most elastic commodities are the grains. For instance, corn. Corn dropped to a multi-year low just the last few days, partly because supply is massive. It's responding to that big pump in price. Crude oil is still in a downward trajectory. The price right now in crude oil, WTI crude oil, about $64 a barrel, is below last year's low. It was first traded in 2005. It's a deflating force in the world's most significant commodity. Why? It's being replaced by technology. And so on a commodity standpoint, the last final best pillar for holding up the whole commodity market is copper. There's three C's in commodities: crude oil, corn, and copper. The copper's hanging in there, but it just put in a significant new high for a bad reason, and it's starting to revert lower. And if it does what it normally does, it drops closer to $3 a pound versus staying above $5 a pound. Current price is around $4.50.
Interesting. So yeah, it's almost like these deflationary forces around the world, it almost makes it inevitable. And I hate to use that word inevitable, but I would say it's a very dangerous time for U.S. equities and U.S. economy with all these deflationary forces that we see, and not only around the world, but also in commodities, correct?
Well, that's the key thing, is when you get to 2x GDP in terms of the equity market capitalization, it is the economy. Now, I guess I'm a bit jaded. I started in the business in 1988, covering Japanese clients from the Chicago Board of Trade night session. And I get to feel, I understand, they peaked in 1989 and they were in a pretty significant deflationary spiral for about 30 years. Now, they've come back recently, but that's happening in China right now. The difference is China has been a decisive enabler of the war in Ukraine, which is not my quote, NATO's quote. And it's almost 10 times what we saw from Japan. And they're so much more dependent on exports than Japan was. So at this point, at the normal cycles, it's not performing this, point that out. And then it's looking for catalysts and triggers. Now, a lot of our listeners and viewers have heard me before say, yeah, McGlone, you've been wrong about that. You've been early. That's right. Wrong or early? Well, so far, both. But that's why the key thing I keep watching is U.S. is government bond yields. They're kind of a key indicator. So I used to watch like the top four or five bond yields of the countries outside of the U.S. Their yields, led by China, well, 1.7%, Japan and Germany are running about 100 basis points below the U.S. Before the financial crisis, they were much higher than the U.S. So this is all that global tilt. And I look for other signs, and that's why I start with gold. Now, gold to S&P 500 ratio, if you just look at, depends on how you look at it, let's just take gold divided by the S&P 500, it's starting to bounce up higher from basically a trough that is very similar to the 1971-72. And from similar levels, and for good reason. So that looks like it's starting to head higher. And the key thing also to remember, Andrew, is we always see on my screens CNBC, Bloomberg, CNN is how great the stock market is. But since 2017 now, the total return in the S&P 500 has been flat versus gold. I mean, it's almost, it's almost unheard of for 8 years. And that's the sign, okay, well, is the stock market going to go up higher? Well, it's already the highest it's ever been. Or is gold just catching up? And to me, that's more likely to happen continued into the end of the year. I hate to say that I fully expect the rock to continue beating stocks, but the indications are there. You look for inflection points and you see what's going to happen. I think we'll have some better indications for this year, for the rest of this year. Meaning if we should get a normal correction in the stock market, maybe 5%. And then, you know, when everybody does, it buys a dip and goes right back up. But when at some point that stops, and I didn't say if, that's when we have the next big trade. And I'm suspecting it's getting close to that end game. And that's the point where now we're having so much jawbone for the Fed to cut. Now, I think that's partly because of Bessent and the current administration gets how expensive things are, how risky things are to not start cutting rates. I mean, they're getting very serious. To me, it's showing panic. We need to get rates to keep this market up so I can get through midterms. But markets will always prevail. It's just a question of when and how long. So my indications still stick with, I still think gold will be the best performing asset, one of the best performing assets by the end of this year. And the bottom line for that to really accelerate is if the stock market gives back some of this 10% gains.
Yeah, got it. And it's interesting. I've had three high-profile guests on in the past week. Well, I've had more than that, but three of them, and you might know them, Dave Cullum, Alistair McLeod, and Professor Steve Hanke out of DeHopkins. They more or less, you paraphrase what they've already told me. And it's like revaluations have never been this high. Things have never been this stretched. And especially Professor Steve Hanke, he's told me his bubble meter's off the charts. It's eerily similar how this is to 1929. Now this, and just looking at probabilities, this could absolutely go on forever. This could, who knows? But the thing is, Dave Cullum summed it up perfectly. He says, Soviet Union went on for 70 years. It shouldn't have worked for 70 years. It was supposed to stop. And then it stopped. So it's eerily similar, I guess, to all of those parallels, if you would. And I hate to paint that in a broad brush, but I think it is.
Gradually then suddenly, right? So, and that's why I look for the indications. The leading edge of all this was in 2009, at the depths of the financial crisis, the world was introduced to this cryptocurrency called Bitcoin, right? Now, if you look at coinmarketcap.com, there's 19 million of them. We all have known the lessons of unlimited supply, speculative hubris, and buying and the lessons of you should be selling when they're young. We're pretty extreme in that example. So I look at the leading indicator for all this is Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. So the one key thing to me, it's like, okay, this is what we think is going to happen. So where are the signals? And yes, I've been early at thinking the stock market's going to peak, but not in gold. I just fully expect gold to continue to outperform. So I've been way overweight that and pointed that out. But it's that Bitcoin to gold ratio. And yeah, I've been watching that one for well over a decade. And right now it takes about 35 ounces of gold for one Bitcoin. That's unchanged in the year. The high has been 40 right at the end of the year. And the low this year was 25. To me, the risk is that just tilts lower because we have this highly speculative digital volatile risk asset that all the youngins are piling into. And now, of course, everybody else, really expensive levels. And we have this old guard store value. It's been a great leading indicator. So that Bitcoin to gold ratio peaked about 35 in 2021. It's still at that same level. Now it's gone higher, but it's still flat from that level. Yet almost everything else has gone higher. It's telling us there's a problem. And maybe it's going to be wrong. But for now, I'm sticking with the rock. I'm sticking with that ratio. And I fully expect if that starts tilting downward by the end of the year, which kind of so inclines of that now with Bitcoin peaking, that is a sign that it's just going to mean revert and it's just a range trade and it's going to go back to 9 at 35. 9 is where it bottomed in 2022. And this is one thing I love about being in space, Andy. I got really bullish Bitcoin in 2019. It was around 5,000. I didn't stay bullish the whole time, but my original target was 100,000 in 2025. Well, we reached that target. But now we're at the stage where people like Michael Saylor, who figured it out in 2020 and got piled on and got really bullish about when it was around 10,000, is now extraordinarily more bullish, piling on, doubling down at 100,000 or above 100,000. That's just one of the things that I look back at. The lessons of history do not favor those such types of positions. I wish him luck. I wish everybody else piling on luck. But by saying it's systematic now is our government's endorsed it. They have a vested interest. The Trump administration has endorsed it, have a vested interest. And when we see the pile on in treasuries doing what Michael did, like, oh, look at me. I made money. You can too. Yet they're buying a highly volatile speculative digital asset that can go down more than the stock market and has a history doing that. And here's what I think I end with. Every time when it's gone down and I at Bloomberg, I'm very neutral. I just write what I think. When people send me these messages, it's going to zero, I usually get bullish. Now all the messages I get, it's going to a million or higher. And that's why I get bearish. It's not that complicated.
Yeah, it's the medicine crowds and doing the opposite if you're doing like things upstream, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mike, I want to thank you. We'll end on that. I want to thank you so much again for your time. It really is an honor. I am a big fan, big listener. I consume a lot of what you do. If people want to reach out to you, if they want to follow you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, thank you, Andy. Probably back on your show again, hopefully. I'm the Bloomberg Terminal. I'm on X at Mike McGlone 11 and LinkedIn, Mike McGlone, Senior Commodity Strategist, Bloomberg Intelligence. I'm happy to add people to my distribution list if they reach out.
Got it. And yes, you did reach back to me very, very quickly. You're very responsive. I'll put all of this in the show notes, both on YouTube, Apple, and Spotify. Again, I want to thank you so much, Mike.
Thank you.